Welcome to Beyond the Stables, the podcast that sheds a light on the new generation of top-level show jumpers. Today marks the first of many episodes in English. So join us every Thursday for a new episode where we delve into the world of show jumping with young talents. Today, we're thrilled to be coming to you from the Netherlands with a very special guest, none other than Anastasia Bondarieva. We're actually recording today's episode from her stables, where she has very kindly invited us to explore a glimpse into her life as well as record this episode. Anastasia is not only a rising star in the world of show jumping and a prominent member of the Ukrainian show jumping team in the EEF series, but she is also juggling the demands of law school, being an employee at a tech firm, and her involvement in humanitarian efforts for the Ukraine. In this episode, Anastasia shares with us her incredible journey and how she manages to balance her responsibilities. It is truly impressive, and she really highlights how hard work conquers all. So, we can't wait for you to hear her story and be as inspired as we were. Let's dive in and discover the incredible journey of Anastasia Bondarieva on Beyond the Stables.
They jump the last, they're clear. That's a great start. That is an absolutely superb round.
Today we're in the Netherlands with none other than Anastasia Bondarieva, a young Ukrainian show jumper. As we were reading up on you and preparing for this podcast, we realized that if the world of young riders had a shining star, it would undoubtedly be you. Because from what we see on social media and articles written about you, I think your approach to the sport, your organization, just your whole work ethic is to be inspired upon. So we're really thrilled to have you here today and to hopefully share to our listeners what it's like to do this professionally as a young rider, and especially kind of have a look at the behind the scenes, all the hard work that goes into those five-star Grand Prix.
So hello Anastasia, and we love to start our interviews with a specific question, which is, if your host could talk, what do you think they would say about you?
Hi guys, well first of all, it's such a pleasure and thank you so much for such an introduction. I'm honestly so flattered. And about the question, well I think he would say she's a feisty partner to have on my back. So I think he'll definitely say that. I think he's gonna say sometimes she's a little hard to handle, but we get along most of the time. We fight for it together, so it's good.
To start off with, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not only a professional jumper, but you're also a law student as well as an employee in a tech firm, I think you mentioned.
Yeah, that's correct. So actually, I've been studying law now for 2 years. It's been an amazing journey, but it's been a little bit difficult to combine with the sport. The sport has always been a priority, but at the same time, I think it's very important to develop yourself in today's world and to be something more, you know, to stand out a little bit. So I think it was important for me to do also my studies, and law was always a big passion. I'm quite a black and white person, and that's not always with law, but it was quite interesting to explore myself in that way. And the tech employee, yes, definitely, still am. Still working for a beautiful company in Eindhoven. They're called Switch. They take care of cybersecurity for many companies. They recruit for a couple other high-tech companies. So they're a great company to be a part of. They taught me many things that I'm going to use. Obviously, that's something that I do on the side that doesn't get too involved with the horses or with my time with uni. But yeah, it's good to be a well-rounded person. And at the start, I really focused on being exactly that. But I think the horses are definitely overstepping everything, as they should. But yeah, thank you. I definitely do all of that still.
I have to say, it sounds really impressive. We're just uni students and riders a bit on the side, and we feel like we have our plates full, but I feel like it's nothing compared to you. So talk to us a bit. I mean, you're probably the queen of organization and scheduling and planning. From what we kind of see on social media, it seems like you have your day planned to the absolute minute. But the interesting is that I think I remember seeing last year you were posting stories either riding the horses at 5 in the morning or at 10 o'clock at night or in the office at ridiculous hours. But this year you seemed much more riding at decent hours, kind of a bit more normally structured day. So tell us, what was the shift between last year and this year, and how do you kind of plan your day around all these things, but at the same time, make sure that you're still taking care of yourself.
I love that you noticed that. Yeah, I definitely think there was a gigantic shift because last year I really struggled with organization and, you know, it was all about fitting in everything into the day and not missing on anything. And I think partially, I have to say, it was probably the success of last year that really kind of made me be a little bit more grounded and really focus on the horses and really be like, okay, this is worth it, you know? Whenever you have some great results, it definitely motivates you for the coming months or coming year. So I think that was the shift, you know? I got some good results and I really prioritized things. I laid out my priorities and I was like, okay, this is how much time I want to be spending on the horses. This is how much time I want to be spending on my uni work. This is how much time I'm able to spend in the office. And you know, at the end, I maximized my time I made use of my time effectively. If it means that I have to do the horse's paperwork in the office, well, great. You know, I have a great office space and I can do work for them. And then my spare hour or two in between, I can do work for the horses, some administration that has to be done. And if I can fit in my uni work there as well, good. But I think also another shift was like realizing I really loved the idea of being, you know, superhuman and superwoman. And I really loved the admiration of it, you know, especially from younger generation or like people the same age as me or even older. They really looked up to me. I got a lot of rewarding comments and pats on the back. But at the same time, it really put me in like a very stressful mindset. And I think when I realized that, okay, you can still do as good and you can still be as admirable if you just slow down a little bit and have a bit of a bigger effect at the end, you're going to feel good. And at the same time, you're going to achieve as much or even more in that sector that you want to focus. So then I was like, okay, let go of the idea of being this superhuman, super busy, and actually like come home at 8 and just cook yourself a dinner and just go to bed at a normal hour. Don't wake up at 5, go at the stables at 7, take your time with the horses, and then still feel good to keep going for the rest of the day. And at the end of the month, you don't feel like you're exhausted or burnt out. That was it. Long answer for a short question.
It was a big question to answer as well.
And when you were still at uni, was there a specific athletic programs? Because we know that some universities are very flexible. Our uni is very flexible for athletes, but we know that it's not the case for everyone.
Actually, not at all. So when I was applying for my uni degree, I got a full scholarship program. Not for the horses. I got a full academic scholarship, which means that you are like an exemplary student. You have to show up there for university activities such as, you know, upcoming student programs and meet and greet with prospective parents and prospective students. So it was a complete opposite of what I wanted or what I should have wanted then, but it was a great opportunity again. Everything was funded by the university. So my first full year was funded by the university, but it did add extra pressure because as a scholar, you have to have a certain grade at the end of every semester, like a level that you can't drop below. To be honest, now that I look back, I definitely think it was a little bit unneeded, but it was a great, again, another great thing to put on the list that happened, and I'm super grateful for it. But when the time came to explore that option for year two, I decided, you know what? Fund it yourself. It's uni. Make it work. And don't add that extra pressure because you're doing good enough. So that was basically it. They're not at all, for example, my university at a time, they didn't really know much about my sport. It was I put it as separate draws, you know. Uni was uni, academic, nothing to do with horses, no special programs. If you leave, you leave, but that's your own time. You have to still come back for the lectures or whatever. No, it was not at all like that. Sadly, but I do know many universities do that, and I do encourage anyone who is doing it the type of way that I am to go to those unis that acknowledge your sport and that acknowledge the time that you have to be there. And definitely, I agree with that. For sure, there are many programs that you can find probably better doing that, honestly, than how I did it.
So basically, while you were off, let's say, competing on tour, you still had to hand in all your assignments like any normal college kid, no exemptions, same deadline, same everything.
Oh yeah, really terrible. Even bigger than that, I had to plan my show schedule around my uni schedule, meaning that, like, you know, you have exam week and before that you have prep week, and those 2 weeks would be gone from my schedule. So if there would be like a, especially it got way worse because the Nation Cup season starts end of April, but school only ends end of May, beginning of June, if you're lucky, depends on your schedule. And then, you know, Nation Cups, you can't move them around, like you have to be there. So I got a little bit lucky with the dates because no exam dates clashed, but it was sometimes that, like, you know, I'd come back on a Sunday and then Monday I'd have my 3-hour law exam in this huge hall with 500 students and you're just flabbergasted because only the day before you had to jump this, you know, 150 Grand Prix, and you're like, oh my God, like your head is in two ways. And if it goes good, then you're like happy and your head is still there. And if it goes bad, you're sad and your head is still there still. So like, definitely it was not the right planning, but you learn a lot from it. By pushing yourself, you learn your boundaries. And then I think you can kind of readjust them and reset. But if you're always kind of not taking the risk of pushing yourself, you're always stuck on the same platform. So I did that. I did the hectic thing, but I realized where I'm supposed to be with the adjusting it. And yeah, at the end, the school was a really, really good level and my degree is still very good. So it just depends what you want in life.
And with uni, the show, studying, exam and everything, do you manage to have a social life?
I think a lot depends on where you are in life currently. You know, I had a couple of difficult years. As you know, I come from Ukraine, so the war really affected all of our lives, especially for me. It was a very difficult situation, how to adjust to it while you're here, you know, with the Russian invasion of Ukraine. I just didn't really comprehend how can you keep living here, keep going there when everything stopped there, but everyone around you keeps moving. So I think social life was a very big, like, it sounds very terrible, but it was just not my priority. It was not my priority for the last 2 years. And I got lucky to still be around great friends, and they stuck with me through the process, even though I might have not been the best friend or the most time reliable friend, but I still stuck with some people along the journey. Now I really, really, really love them for that. You know, these 2 years, I have not probably been showing up as much as I could have, but social life is still there. At the end of the day, you're still going to shows. You're still communicating with some people. You still have results. They reach out to you. You know, you celebrate the little victories with your close people. But I think I've learned that family is always there for you. A couple friends here and there, but for the rest, some people drift away, new people come into your life, and that's normal. So I think, like, sure, I definitely maintain some social life. It just hasn't not been my priority the last 2 years. It doesn't mean that I'm a boring human. It just means that, you know, like, sometimes I finish my day at 10 and who the hell wants to go and grab dinner at 10:30? Probably not many people. Like, I mean, talk about, you know, maintaining your form or whatever. So yeah, it just depends. But I'm happy for how I am right now. I think there are other priorities and I think that's okay. That's my self-development. I think definitely for the coming year, I would like to also get out there a little bit and live the young life that I, you know, try to kind of promote a little bit on my social media, and I advise for everyone. But it just depends what is your priority in life. That just wasn't for the last 2 years.
It's important that you know what are your priorities and what do you want to bring your energy to, you know, for your mental health. It's so important.
So important. Yeah.
And now that you've mentioned Ukraine, it's true that when we think about you, we think about Ukraine. It's just a topic we cannot ignore. So as a rider representing your country, do you feel an increasing sense of pride or duty to ride for Ukraine now with everything happening, the war, the invasion? Are there increasing pressure associated with the fact that you compete on the behalf of Ukraine?
Definitely, I wouldn't put it as pressure. I definitely take it as pride, as you say, joy, responsibility, but not in the negative way. More like I'm so honored to come out there, represent, have the flag up there and just ride my best for them. Every result, you know, I do it for the country, obviously, especially these last 2 years. everything is for them. I think it just comes hand in hand, you know. I look at it positively, and actually it was very important because when the war started, I just got a bit lost because I'm like, why am I jumping around here over wooden sticks? You know, my family is there. Everyone is, you know, struggling. There's death around. There's all these problems, you know. And then I was just reminded that, like, my responsibility lays here. This is my duty for the country in the most positive way. I can do good from here. I can represent the country. You know, I can tell people about it. People will acknowledge the situation. And I think for the first year, I really focused on spreading the word, spreading information as much as possible, being here and performing here. So it's just your perspective and the way you look at it. Because also, like, I got a couple questions recently when I was writing Geneva, and they did a beautiful article on me. And in that article, it was actually in French, they did ask me the question, like, how do you feel? You know, you're here and you're doing the horses. Do you feel privileged? You know? And I was like, what is privilege? You know, do I feel a pain? I feel a pain because my family is there, you know, my loved ones, my friends, my nation is struggling. Do I feel privileged? No, I feel a sense of responsibility to be here and to still represent Ukraine. I love it. And especially when I do good, you know, it's great. The light is shining upon Ukraine, firstly, and then upon me.
And we're aware of your involvement in aiding horses and animals in Ukraine. Are you still doing it? Is there a way for us or the general public to help with all the effort you have put in saving animals there?
Yeah, so I, for a very long time, I had the Little and Large Foundation, and I took care of gathering donations and supplies and shipping them over. And we worked with many different little associations and big foundations in Ukraine to spread that, and stables and a lot of volunteers. To be very honest with you, that was a big chunk of work as well. I think it's very, very difficult to do it properly. I definitely still, on my just personal level, I still take care of that. I'm still in contact with loads of shelters, and you know, we're always trying to help. I don't do the foundation on a large base like I did before, because it's gotten very, just simple terms, it's gotten very difficult. It used to be whenever military action happened, you know, at the start, the documentation process was just way more straightforward, fast, easy. Now because of the war has prolonged for so long, sadly, also the documentation thing and the border control, everything became a little bit more difficult because, you know, at the start, it's like, go, 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 all the aid, all the donations, like, bring them in. Now it's like, okay, do we actually want to let this truck, you know, like, so I definitely, I lost a little bit of that. I felt like at a point I did great work, and we kind of reached a huge milestone, and then we gave it over to some volunteers and gave it over. I always look back and I'm like, okay, I would really love to pick it back up or do something else with it. But again, you know, like, you can't spread yourself so thin. Would it be effectual? And then you think, okay, any help is effectual. Definitely, I agree with what you said. Like, there's always a way to help, you know. There's always trustworthy donations for the military, for the army, especially nowadays. Truthfully, everything goes to the army, you know. Sadly, animals are a little bit, you know, on the second stage of it. But there's also amazing, amazing volunteers that do great work in Kiev and Ukraine, and that do take care of personal donations, you know, and you feel like you're treated well. And those are all links that I feel like, as a person on social media, I should be spreading more. So I do think that that's my next goal, is to make our generation a little bit more aware that it's still there, it's happening, and that those are the links that you can use. Those are the people that you can reach out. So definitely after this conversation, I'm feeling like that should be my next step. But it's a little bit like what we said, you know, it's great work up until it takes over your life. And then more things came also important. And, you know, at the end of the day, personal donations are still happening, but the big charity, I just couldn't keep up the same work. And it's a big responsibility to upkeep. You always have people that need help, and you always want to deliver. And sometimes you just need that pressure, you know, lift it off and just have some time to breathe. So right now I'm just breathing a little bit from that.
But I think it's good, and your whole perspective on the situation is very interesting, especially how I mentioned that in the end, you're helping your country by being here and representing them. And I think you're doing it in a beautiful way. You know, you post a lot about it on social media, media, and I think what really separates you from the rest was that you're very honest, you're very raw about everything, you kind of show things how they are. And I think for the public, that's really nice, because then we also get a nice little insight. We did read the article they wrote on you in Geneva. I think they did a really good job. It was a really beautiful article. And yeah, I mean, you're in a totally different situation than the rest. And the way that you see it is very, very impressive, I have to say.
Yeah, like just to add on that, I think it's super easy to get like sucked into it. And that was a little bit the problem. You know, you really want to keep going here and keep pushing yourself, but as long like your head gets really sucked into the grief and the sadness and everything, and it's just, it was so difficult to keep that balance between everyone around you having plans for the day after, for the weekend, for the month, even with the horses and everything, and then you're like, your heart is like, oh my god, but there's the war going on, how can you even think about what's going to happen tomorrow, you know? So it was just a very conscious decision that like to keep going, I have to have my head here, and I still have to obviously influence people to do good and donate and to spread awareness and to explain things properly, how they should be, you know, taken in. But I just couldn't fully, you know, you can't just be two people at the same time. You really have to keep going here and do as much as you can. But for the rest, yeah, it's just as much as you can do, really.
Yeah, you have to learn at some point to either say no or maybe not do something fully, to do it a bit halfway.
Exactly.
Or yeah, as much as energy and time as you can give it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then, so going back a bit to on social media, you're very raw about everything. You'll talk about the good days, but I think what's interesting is that you also talk about the days where nothing goes to plan. And why do you think it's so important to talk about these days? Because in the end, I feel like in the sport, you end up having more bad days than good days.
For sure. Oh my god, it's terrible. Awful. Sometimes I just, honestly, sometimes I go to bed and I'm like, I just don't want to wake up. This sounds awful. I'm sorry for saying that. But no, I definitely agree. I think this is the thing. I think the good days allow you to push through those terrible days. Definitely the good days make it worth it. I definitely learned this year that hard work does pay off, but damn, those days are hard. So difficult. And I do find it a little bit easier just sharing, you know? I get comfort and ease from the people that follow me or reach out, you know, and they can kind of relate. And I don't think people post enough of this. Like, honestly, tell me about your terrible days. Like the big writers especially, like, I know you have problems with these papers, you know, I know you have problems organizing this truck to go like 2,000 kilometers away to a show, you know, like, tell me how you deal with this, like, I need some help. We definitely need more of that, because then, you know, like, I share something, someone reaches out to me and they're like, oh my god, this is a great idea to take care of this situation, I wish I knew that earlier. And I'm like, I wish I knew that earlier, you know? So yeah, I think it just makes it a little bit easier. That's the answer. Like really sharing it and talking to someone, it's awesome. Okay, maybe you can also just voice note your friend, but I find it easier to share with some 10K, you know? So it's fine.
And talking about those riders that also have shitty days and everything, are there any riders you can look up to or anyone that inspires you? It can be experienced riders or even young riders.
I draw a lot of inspiration from writers from our generation, actually. I'm quite lucky to be friends with some of them. For example, the Conter sisters, Mimi and Zoe, they're very good friends and they inspire me a lot. They are also very hard worker girls and they're just, you know, always all around, and they're also sharing their journey a lot, and I like to be around that sort of situation, because they push me to be better and push me to cook and like keep going, you know, never look down. But also at the older generation, you know, like I've always had some of my role models, you know, like Laura Crow and Penelope Prevost and all of these incredible female writers. But also, nevertheless, I also obviously look up to male writers, you know, like Ben Mayer and these days, you know, Henrik von Eckermann and all these incredible names. I think sometimes I'm like, I'm looking more at the upcoming writers even, because they are Yeah, I think they are the ones that are like, you know, biting the dust and like trying to power through it. And they are the ones that are literally exploring the system that we're currently living in, that we're currently, you know, the jumping and the courses and how to take care of the horses and you know, how to just kind of like do it well in this sport. So I have to also look at what they're doing to try to navigate myself, because if they're having some success, maybe I could, you know, sneak into their system a little bit. So I think some like incredible names like Shamey, he's doing incredible right now, and Thibaut Spitz also, and all these, you know, incredible young riders here in Belgium and Holland. I'm not gonna name too many because then, you know, the list just goes on so long, but you definitely know the ones to look out for. And it's also good when you're kind of, you can be in contact with them or ask them questions, and in the end we're all sharing, and yeah, it's good to learn from each other. I think that's also a big thing. Like, you know, when you post on social media, like what I do, I don't think I do it to show off at all. That's really not my purpose. Like, I really don't care to show off the horses or the new one or the old one or the sale. I really do care to just share and get something in return, like knowledge, you know, or feedback or something like that, because it's all for self-development. I only do it for my self-development, someone else's self-development, growing opportunities, you know, just to like keep rising up.
And you, like in the young riders circle in the international competitions, do you share a lot or is it very competitive between one another?
I think it's only competitive for the 2 minutes in the ring. And in the end, that competition is you with your horse against the timer and the jumps. It's not really a competition. You're not really going in and you're thinking, okay, this girl or this guy is on the leaderboard is number one. I need to beat them. No, you're like going in thinking, I need to vibe with this course because I need to beat this timer situation. So it's not at all. No, I don't really think about the people because it's so much just about you and your horse. Like, you already have so much to think about. Why on earth would I be going in and thinking, oh my God, they're in front of me, I need to beat them. Like, I don't have that sort of rivalry. Maybe that will come when I'm, you know, at a bigger level, but within the young riders, what I've learned is it's a very supportive environment. Like, I have a lot of great friends and colleagues and people I know that I can just like ask in the warm-up, okay, like, is this 5 or 6? Or is this like, you know, something like to check up, like, how did you ride that? Also, I'm super lucky to be working with the Kirsten brothers. Like, I train with their dad, Peter Kirsten, currently. And I get to watch their system, get to watch how they do things. And whenever we do shows together, they're kind of similar age as me. So whenever we do shows together, I feel comfortable asking them, you know, it's never like, I want to do better than them or they want to do better than me. In the end, you're kind of, yeah, it's against the timer and against the ring. It's not against each other. And, you know, if one day they come out on top, super, I'll be there to applaud them. Like, I have all the respect for all of the other young riders and all of the friends because they are fighting against their own mind, against their own time, against their own everything. So the fight is just within you, not against each other at all. Like, and all results should be celebrated.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, when you go into the ring, it's also a mental game, right? Do you have someone helping you with that?
Yeah, to be honest, I do. For a long time, I didn't. I did when I was in my junior career for like 2 years. I was working with the wonderful Poppy. She comes from Ireland. I don't know if you know her, but she works for the Young Riders Academy as well, with the Young Riders Academy as well. Poppy Blanford. I might be saying the surname a little bit wrong, but she's wonderful. She's very good at what she does. She's quite, let's say, big in her sphere. She's amazing, really. And then I stopped because I had a couple Europeans, and then, you know, I did it leading up to that because that's always a big stress. And then I stopped because the results were coming and I just thought, okay, leave it. And then I started back up again last year because of the war and because we had to jump a lot of nation cups, and it's very important how everything is mental, really. Like at the, you get to a point where, like, okay, you know the horse, you know how to approach the fence, you know the course, you've learned the course, but then you're like, okay, how do I deal with what's inside my head? How do I not make a mistake because I'm worried or because I'm scared or because I'm too much thinking about the clear round, you know? And that really comes from your head. And that became my biggest enemy at one point. So I really became grounded and I started working with just a personal coach, and she's good. I keep it up now. I have regular things, and we found a way, a system that works for me. Things that I should think about to not let my thoughts drift away in the wrong direction. Just little tricks and things that I have in my planning to keep me kind of focused and stuff like that. I think it's so unique, guys. Like, it's so personal. Like, you have to decide what works for you as a human, like, because we're all very different characters. So like, what works, like, even me sharing now, like, okay, this is what I do, might not even work for, you know, the rest, just because like, my thoughts are very different to her thoughts or his thoughts. So you just have to figure out what works for you and stick to that.
I think one of the most important things is to kind of keep up the routine, even when you think you don't need it anymore.
Oh yeah, that's terrible. That's always a thing, you know, always a thing. Like, you're, whenever one thing goes wrong, but then 10 things went right after that one thing, you're like, oh my God, we're going to change the whole thing, you know, gotta change. We're not doing anything correct. I have that like a lot. That's honestly, I have that a lot. My trainer goes spastic with me, and he's like so much more grown up. He's like, you know, he's been through all of that with all his kids and everything. So he's like, honestly, you just gotta stick to it. Like, everything is going great. But it's, I think a lot of it comes from self-doubt, you know, like when you're on the way up, it's very difficult to believe that you're gonna get there because you're like on your way, like you don't necessarily see it. But I was actually talking recently to Julien Guettin, who you've probably interviewed recently, and he also said that. He said, you have to believe that there is the light at the end of the tunnel, even if it's all gray right now, you know? So you have to keep going, because he's like, honestly, there is. Everyone who's gotten there is going to tell you there is, so why shouldn't you believe in it? So it's something that you just like, again, it's this little trick in your head. You have to make this conscious decision and make this little switch that like, yes, I'm gonna keep going. I'm not gonna doubt myself. And okay, you're gonna have doubts because you're gonna miss two offense, or you're gonna have two down or five down one course. This course is gonna spook at a big class, and you're, you know, the results are all, you know, went to shit. Sorry. But you know, at the same time, you just have to believe that there's gonna be the next round, and you're gonna keep going, and opportunities are gonna arise from it, and have to keep working hard. Like, hard work is literally the way.
The key to the sport of it.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. But I definitely agree that kind of motivation and self-belief is the most important thing, because then you also, you transmit it to your horse, to your routine, to kind of like to your everyday life. And then slowly things do start going according to plan. And well, when we think of that, we think of, well, you've had a lot of very good results, but I think last year you won the Nations Cup in the EEF series for Ukraine in Athens. Can you tell us a bit about what this moment felt like, going into the arena, leaving, the award ceremony? It must have been such a special moment, also such a moment of thinking, you know, all the hard work we've put, all the other legs we've been to, like, we finally made it, we've won one. What was it like?
Oh yeah, it was honestly crazy. It was the most spectacular experience ever. I'll forever cherish it. We had a lot of Ukrainian supporters also there that day, which just made it extra special. I don't know, it just felt like, it felt like it belonged, you know, like it really, like you said, like all of the hard work that you put in, you could finally feel it, you know, feel it. It was so rewarding, like exhilarating. It was so great. And then I just think like, was loads of different things, you know, like I was last to go, you know, in the both rounds. So it was like, it felt like a lot of pressure, but again, like it felt very doable, and that's the best feeling ever. And then when you know, when you come out on top and you come out of that ring, you almost don't believe it. Like, I remember coming out and like, you know, because the stewards have to check your boots and everything, and you stand there for like one, I don't know, it wasn't even 1 minute, I guess it was like 30 seconds, but you're just like, you're gasping for air because you don't know, like, you're like, oh my God, like, that's crazy for Ukraine to win. And I am there, like, I think I was like only 19 then also, like, okay, not that I'm much older now, but, you know, like, I was just like, and I did that also, I was part of that success, and you're just like, oh my God, this is crazy. But I think what was even crazier, it was only the start of a fantastic year, you know, like we did that, now we have to keep going, you know, like, now it just motivated us like crazy. Still, like, I still carry that. It was an incredible thing, and I wish for every young rider to experience, like, maybe not, you know, like, just experience a little part of of that feeling because it's so motivating and it's so rewarding. And you can take all of the terrible days that I share on social media. You can I'd redo them all again. Honestly, I'd do them all for that one win. I'd give me all of them. So it's fine.
And you had recently another very rewarding experience. It was your first participation in the 5-star show in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
How was it? And do you feel like there is a big difference between the 3- and 4-star level to the 5 stars?
Yeah, I definitely feel like there is. Like, it's very intense. But I think, like, upcoming as a young writer, you just feel a little bit more intense because these are all the people that you look up to. Like, I mean, literally people that I keep mentioning, you know? So I think it was just, again, like, it's in your head a little bit. Like, I think it's such a mind game because you go there thinking, oh my God, like, this is going to be so difficult, so big. I have to be in the warm up with all of these intimidating writers. You just feel like you're not. Sadly, you feel like you're not good enough, you know? But I think it was a great milestone because the best lesson that I've learned from it is that it's very possible. I have to keep working, obviously. It's always the thing. Always keep working. But it's very possible. And yeah, okay, you know, maybe you feel like you don't belong there, but it doesn't mean that you're not going to, you know? You're already, like, you're so young, you're already able to jump there, you know? So it was a great start of the year, like, not gonna lie, like, to jump there and to experience the atmosphere and to still have a good show. Like, I think that was very important. Like, we were going there, we're like, okay, let's be realistic. We don't want to just go there to just have some bad results, you know? Like, to just say that you've jumped there. No, like, you want to have a decent start. You want to represent yourself well at that sort of level. So I think I was quite pleased with the weekend. I was the most pleased with my mindset, you know, because I took it all in well. I stayed cool. So it was, yeah, it was incredible. It was pretty big, I must say. Like, especially the last day, it was bloody huge, but it was very, very nice. I'd say indoor is very difficult. Indoors are just a little more, you need a little more experience. Everything happens so fast inside. If you think everything happens fast outside, like, it just got sped up, like, doubled, you know, like, it's double the speed. Everything is just so, comes quick and you have to adjust and adapt. And the horses, you really have to manage, you know, pick them up and get going, you know? So I think it was maybe be a little challenging, but I was lucky to ride there and to be accepted. And you don't pick your opportunities, you stick with what you're given, you know? So that was also a big thing that I didn't have to buy in or all that. It was with a wild card. And for Ukraine, it's always such a big honor if we get a wild card, because I mean, there's only like really 5 or 6 competitive riders jumping in Europe. So like, if we get a wild card for a certain show, you go, like, you make it work, you go and you really try to push yourself to do well, because you can't just always be buying into these shows or doing it through contacts. You also want to get up the rankings list and to be entering these shows automatically. So yeah.
And you mentioned wild card contacts. How does it usually work to get into these big shows? Do you register? Are you a wild card? Do you get invited? Do you have to qualify?
Oh, it's a very difficult concept. Like, honestly, very difficult, especially when you, like, anything from like 3-star, 4-star, 5-star, you really have to be top 100, top 200 to get in easily. But 5-star is like, yeah, you can't get in unless you are that. Sometimes you do get like an opportunity for Central Europe countries, or like, you know, also like just for countries that are often on the show jumping circuit. They get a certain amount of riders they can push through their federation. And then the federation makes a decision like, okay, this show, these riders are going to go to this show. We're going to give it to this young rider to try out. We don't have that for Ukraine. We don't have spots in big shows. We are never the invited nation. So like, when you go on a schedule at every show, you have like at one point on one of the pages, like, invited nations. Mm-hmm. That means that all of these nations have the ability to allow their riders, a couple of their riders, to ride at that show. Ukraine sadly does not have that right now because they're trying to climb up the rankings. And when the country, so all of their riders' rankings combined, the country's ranking is big enough, then we will be eventually on the list. But so far, it is not Central Europe. It has to be Eastern Europe. So like Poland, Latvia, Lithuania, Romania, all of that. obviously, me being based in Central Europe, I don't go there that often. And also the shows are a different level. So it's very difficult. So two stars are not a problem. Young rider shows are not a problem. You're always kind of, Ukraine can enter and all that. But everything up to that, it either has to be like the federation really has to push for you, fight, write emails, you know, or it has to be through the wild card. And then the wild card is also very difficult. The federation, so the wild card is not the show that decides. It's the jumping, the FEI jumping committee, that section that they decide, okay, we're going to give this young rider a chance. But it doesn't mean that like I entered for the wild card and they just pick me. It means that there's a couple of wild cards in there and then just one rider gets it. And sometimes like if they give a spot to someone else and they decline, they say, okay, we actually got into this other show closer to home, whatever, then they can give it to another pick. But it's like such a, and I'm still only learning about it because obviously I've been at this level only for this last year, and I'm starting this year as well. So I'm just kind of like learning how it works, but I have a great, like the federation is super helpful. They really try to make it work and they suggest like where you think you're going to get in. My trainer is very good also with that, with the show plan. And my mom, she's a big organizer for me. She's a big mama manager. So she, yeah, not like every day here at the stables, that's my job, but more like bigger things like for shows and stuff. She really tries to push with contacts and you know, phone calls and emails and all that, especially big shows. Like, yeah, it's difficult to get in, like if you're not on the rankings. And also, how do you get there? You need the experience to get the points, to jump the clear rounds, you know, to be able to then enter these shows. And that's just how it works. And sometimes like, yeah, like in a two-star, like you fight so hard to get like 15 points to just, you know, to go full gas in a 145. Sometimes it is easier to jump a lovely clear round in a four-star and then you get a little bit more points. You know, it's just like, it's a give and take type of situation. And yeah, you have to work hard.
But yeah. I think that highlights also even more how difficult it is to penetrate kind of this five-star and four-star level. I mean, we knew it was hard to get into these shows, but I don't think we imagined how hard it was and that you really needed a certain scoring. Do you think that there's something that should be changed, that the federation could make some changes maybe to make it easier for young riders to kind of access it?
Definitely. But I do think in the last 2 years, a lot of young riders are given the opportunity. But it's like you said, it's a very secluded, exclusive circle, you know, that it's very difficult to be a part of. But at the same time, you're like, okay, but they've made the, you know, the work. They deserve to be going to all these shows. But I think at the same time, like if you say, yeah, there should be more spaces, then it also becomes more difficult in the Grand Prix. It's like, you know, if you say, okay, it's not 50 in the Grand Prix, make it 70 in the Grand Prix, then it also becomes way more difficult, you know, and maybe a little bit unfair on the horses in some way and on the people who deserve to be there, you know. So I think it's going, like it's moving. I think the FEI have a very good idea on how to kind of help the younger generation. There's many programs now and many like systems you can be a part of, like the Aachen Academy and the Young Riders Academy, the Rolex Academy, I mean. So like, I think it's just, yeah, it's finding your own way. Depends where you are from. Definitely more spaces for Eastern European riders in Central Europe. Like, that's ridiculous that Ukraine is still not anywhere on the list. But I think we are fighting hard enough to make that happen and change. And you never know, like from 5 to 10 years, maybe we'll be on every, you know, list. But it's crazy sometimes that you're not the inviting nation and then you have to fight for a spot. And then you see your friend who got in the chance to ride, obviously worked as hard as you did, but still, at least they're, then, you know, their country is invited and their federation just has to make that switch and make that, you know, invitation. And you are just like, even if the federation wants to enter you, they can't, you know. And that's a bit difficult, but that, you know, that's going to change eventually. Just has to come with results and stuff.
So you've ridden in incredible arenas, all the Longines Global Champions Tour and everything. Would you ever consider riding for one of these teams?
Because they do have like one under 25 rider per team, and we know that quite a few young riders try to get into those, also to be able to make it to those five-star levels.
Yeah, it's crazy because this year, actually, if you look at the list, like, I was shocked. A lot of, like, friends and people I know, like, I'm so happy for them, thrilled, because obviously that's the goal. Like, at least when you're, you know, last past 5 years, we've been looking at that, you know, growing up, and you're just thinking, oh my God, that's awesome. Incredible rings and, you know, like, just such a luxury thing to be a part of. But I have to be very honest, I think that's a very different side of the sport. I don't necessarily, like, I don't want to give my opinion on it too much, because obviously if you have the chance to do it, it's very difficult to decline that chance. But at the same time, I think I have different goals and priorities, at least for this year and next year. I think our sport can be divided into two parts, you know, like the old school type of sport, those shows which are so prestigious, but older, antique and just extreme level of sport, like Dublin, you know, Gothenburg, Fasterbro, Aachen, Spruce, you know, like, you can't compare them to these new, also incredible shows like, you know, like Monaco, Saint-Tropez, Cannes, and all that. I haven't quite decided, you know, like, do I want to be part of both? Do I want to stick to one? You know, I think I have a very clear vision that for me right now, the real sport lays on the other side of it. And although it's incredible and amazing to be part of the global teams, and it's an opportunity that will probably only rise a couple times in your career. I mean, depends. I mean, probably if you're Ben or Henrik, it's a couple more than a couple times. But, you know, for someone like me, for example. So I'm very realistic that one is a long-term thing that I could probably sustain long-term and really reach the top through that way, and the other would probably be a shorter cut, but I just don't think I'm as interested in that shorter cut. I think it's a very different side of the sport. I think it's very glamorous, but is it really what the sport is about? That's the question I always ask myself. Like, I'm not too sure. So I don't have a definite answer for that. I think it's incredible, but I don't know if I don't know where I stand right now, really.
And also, like, this sport is becoming increasingly expensive. So how are you dealing with it? Do you own your own horses? Are you riding for owners? Are you doing business? How does it work?
Unbelievable, yeah. Unbelievably expensive this sport is. It's so sad also at the same time, because you have a lot of great upcoming riders that just don't have the financial part of it fixed, which is so difficult, which just makes me feel so sad. I think the entries are just ridiculously large, you know, like,
could we ask shows, what's an estimate of a weekend, let's say, at a 4 or 5 star show for one horse and one rider?
I don't know, something between 800 to 1,000. Wow. Just for a horse, you know. And I mean, like, you're just taking that's what you pay at the office, but you have to think about the cost of getting the horse there. What about the cost of your groom there? What about the food? What about, you know, like, so many things. It's crazy. It's so difficult. I think, well, currently a lot of my horses are owned by my family. I'm very lucky. My parents are very supportive. We have some horses that are half owned, half family, half investors. Obviously, my goal for the future is to do more of that, to do more business. I do sell some of my horses, but again, it's the priorities. If you want to do something big, you always have to keep some of the horses around to keep going. Like, I mean, you can't really run out of horses at your stables. You need a good squad, a good team. So yeah, it depends on the year. It depends what you have. I'm always looking. I'm looking to work with people. And you know, you can start very, very small with just, you know, a very young horse that doesn't, you know, cost too much money, improve them a little bit, sell, and then develop it in that way, because you earn people's trust in that way. That's definitely what I'm working on right now, or like every year. That's what you're thinking. You're always thinking, oh my God, the costs, how do I make it more efficient? I need to work with other people. I need to work harder. I need to show them that I'm someone who they can invest into. I'm someone they can trust, you know? So it's definitely something I'm working for right now, but it's also very difficult. I mean, like, you're young, you know, like, someone has to have some faith in you, and like, it's an opportunity. You have to catch it. You have to be open, you know, like, your eyes have to be always looking around, like, come on, like, let's go. So yeah.
And this is one of the thoughts we had as well. I mean, how do you get owners to trust, let's say, a 20-year-old with a multi-million dollar horse?
Or are you going to them, or are they coming to you?
I think it's very different, very unique for every person. Like, I think when you're already at that level, you have enough contacts, and then they are coming to you. When you're a little bit of a lower level, you have to do that yourself, or, you know, your parents can help you a little bit. I think it's just Yeah, it's a whole other topic. I think going into it would just prolong our conversation for another hour, but it's so difficult. It's so difficult. Yeah. Currently, I'm quite blessed with a good string of horses. I plan to keep it that way. I plan to continue to work hard to reach out and to make myself available for more opportunities. And that's the goal. That's my way right now.
And talking about your string of horses, you posted the other day that you just celebrated 1 year with your gentle giant, as you call him, Calder. I'm sorry, I hope I pronounced that right.
And
I have to admit, from seeing your rounds and everything, I thought the two of you had been together for way longer than a year.
Yeah, it's crazy. It was just like, it went so fast. Honestly, I took him to a show and I like, it was a year ago, I took him to a French show, Rouen, one of those, you know, the outdoor. Sorry, I'm so bad. And then couldn't stir, couldn't get the control, anything. And then like, 3 weeks later, we already went to Paris to do the U25s there. And that was awesome, amazing. That was like my second show with him only. And it went so fast from there. It was like this crazy bond. Like, I love the horse and I do think he feels very alive with me, you know? Like, that's what I said. Like, when you asked me, like, that's who I thought about. Because he feels very much like, oh my God, this is new. This is exciting. This girl has no idea what she's doing in these big rings. Let me show her around, you know? And like, some of the times, like, it was literally like that. I was like, oh my God, you gotta do this thing, because I'm like, I'm not sure what we're doing here. You gotta help me. But this is the way, like, sometimes you come across incredible horses and maybe they already did something incredible, like Calder. He's already had a beautiful career with Romain de Gay, and also he was part of my El Martin system. So, but I think he just got excited to have something new, and I think that's great. I'm super lucky to have him. I keep him happy. I keep him very spoiled. He's allowed to do anything at the stables. He walks around as if it's his own, you know, like, so I plan to keep it that way, and hopefully he rewards me back.
Okay, so heading into the last question.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to young riders out there? Like, what do you think is key to, I don't want to say having it all in this sport, but kind of having it all, what you want and what you're looking for in the sport, kind of your goals?
Well, having it all is definitely not the way, trust me. I think celebrate the little wins and don't allow the bad times to get you too low. Look up, keep going, and stay motivated. Find whatever brings you motivation. Keep drawing from that source and keep going. There is so many bad moments in our sport, sadly, whether it's from horses or whether it's from people that are in our sport or the results, that it's just so easy to kind of leave it all, you know, become unmotivated and quit, you know. There's so many opportunities to quit. You just, every day you kind of get discouraged in some sort of way. But I think it's just so important to keep holding to that goal, keep holding to that dream, and slowly work towards it, and don't run, walk, you know? There's no shortcut, sadly. There's no shortcut. And whether you believe it or not, life is gonna teach you that, like, you're gonna have to find your long way. And trust me, that long way is still not the longest. You're still doing good. Like, rewarding yourself is also a big aspect. I'm still learning, you know? That's the thing. Like, I remember talking to and giving some interviews last year or 2 years. Perspectives change. And you have to figure out for yourself what works for you that moment. And don't be scared to change that the year after or half a year after. You make leaps, you know, and you progress and develop. So, like, obviously, you're going to change your perspective. And yeah, it's just good to have a wide knowledge and understanding that you're here, but you could also be much further, but you could also be way back there, you know? And I think a lot of us forget, because we're in this race, that there are so many people who are still way back there. So don't get discouraged, keep working hard, and I'm sure there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Thank you so much for this insightful conversation, Anastasia.
Yeah, I think it's been really interesting, and I think it's just so interesting to see how motivated you are, you know, to making it to the top of the sport and all the steps you take and the hard work and that also having a bit of reassurance that it does work out at the end.
No, it's such a pleasure, guys. I really enjoyed talking to you, and I hope this is going to be interesting for others to listen. Thank you so much for having some time to hear me out and for your wonderful questions.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Beyond the Stables. We hope you found Anastasia's story as captivating and inspiring as we did. You can follow her journey on Instagram and cheer her from afar. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to follow us and subscribe to stay updated on our latest release. Your support is important as it helps us continue to bring you inspiring stories from the world of show jumping. See you next week for our next episode.
They jump the last, they're clear. That's a great start.